This is the Amateur Skeptics Podcast number 314. Joining this evening is Mac.
Nothing clever to say this week.
In Under the Wire, Mad Cat.
Nothing clever.
All right. And of Not course, clever. The dumbass himself.
My mind to your mind. My thoughts to your thoughts. My mouth to your knee. These foreplay dice suck.
Hey, you got foreplay dice. That's cool.
Yeah, foreplay dice are awesome. I don't have any foreplay dice.
Oh, you're missing out.
Apparently.
You have five play dice?
Got to get the glowy ones.
Sure, that makes sense. You want to be able to see them in the dark.
Correctamundo.
Because who has sex with the lights on, right? Come on. Am I right?
What?
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
How's everybody doing this week?
To me, it doesn't matter.
What's that?
I said, to me, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't
lights
matter?
Lights on, lights off.
Yeah, no, I actually think I prefer the lights on, right? I want to be able to...
I guess my question about the foreplay dice is, you know, what number of sides do they have?
Yeah, I don't know. And despite what dumbass is thinking, yes, that other person is my wife. It's okay. That's not why I chose the topic.
Hey, we'll see.
Really?
That sounds really ominous, doesn't it? Anything else going on?
Maybe.
I know Max fighting his sciatica still. I am having my own back problems. You know, getting old is it's not for old people.
My body is quickly decomposing.
Is it?
Yes.
Wow.
My hair is falling out. My joints are achy.
How long has that been going on for, cuz?
I think the moment I turned 40.
You know what? I hear 40. Oh, wow. You know, 40 or 50, right? That's when things kind of take a slide on you.
Yep. Or to put it as Warren Zevon so aptly put it in his song, "My Shit's Fucked Up." My shit's fucked up.
Yeah, well, all right. Now that we're past our ills, I guess we should move on. What time is it?
Oh, well, just a moment.
Yeah, check the document.
I'm checking
check the calendar and your watch.
Yeah, and everything else I have.
If that has penis, that means it is?
What? Last month. it's brain not working time.
Okay, it is now time for Dumbass's Masturbation Moment, brought to you
only
by Dumbass.
Only Dumbass? Only Dumbass?
Yes, brought
dumbass's
to you.
Dumbass's Masturbation Moment.
Brought to you by the Dumbass.
By the Dumbass.
Media Empire.
Media Empire.
You are not helping.
That was perfect.
I am not helping.
The Amateur Skeptics present Ian's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire. The Dumbass Media Empire, bringing you content that touches people while they touch themselves.
Here's the thing: well
is that
for you.
There is also no way that I'm fixing that. It's going in just like that.
Cool. All right, my work is done.
Your work is done. Yeah, you have broken me, and we have proof that you know in the
we have proof that I've broken you.
Well, I mean, it does sound like that. So
wow.
The first AI toy allows users to masturbate only using their mind. I'll tell you what, this sounds like a winner, because if you're sitting there at work and all of a sudden it's like, you know what, I'm sitting here, maybe nobody would notice, and your both hands are above the table, and what, you just start masturbating with your mind. This sounds like a good thing. Is that how it works?
You need to wear a funny hat.
Ah, well, okay, how funny?
Very funny. Very funny.
Yes, you know those EGG helmets, electroencephalography.
Okay, I'm not sure that that's...
Encephalography, I think, maybe?
Encephalography. I don't think
that
that's...
It says EEG. Actually, it says EGG at one point, and it says...
Okay.
Yeah.
And electroencephalography...
I think it's actually...
Yeah, okay.
I think it's actually EEG, because that's the one... But it says EGG at the top there, I think.
It's not discrete, is what it comes down to, though.
No.
No. No, it's... You've seen them. They're shown them in sci-fi, the little helmet with the electrodes that are, like, attached to various points over your head. So yeah, you wear one of those, and there's a video you can see of a guy who's remotely operating the device on a simulated penis, and shows it going faster. And it's like, ooh, he used his mind to do that. Which I guess this is old technology, because we've been doing kind of using these things to kind of control devices for, like, I know over a decade, maybe a couple of decades now.
Yeah, I remember some Star Wars toys that we were using to do something. And they would, like, worked on theta waves or something. Maybe theta waves or something, but I forget. But I remember some devices like that were, like, kind of control it, with you could kind of get better about it. So
here's the thing. Given that all technology should ultimately geared towards human sexual satisfaction, how come it's taken this long for us to use this technology for sex?
Could it just be maybe we're just now hearing about it? I mean,
like, there's been some sort of private club for people.
Exactly. It's been going on. It's been going on in the underground for years now, and you're just learning about this, and you're ashamed of you.
I am. I wanted to be part of that scene.
I bet you did. So this is actually a device that he's got a thing on his head, and he's using it to control it and to make it go slower and faster.
Right. This is the inventor is a man named Brian Sloan, who is described as an erotic entrepreneur, which that's also a title that I'd really like to have.
So Brian being close to
you
brain.
You can call yourself that.
Brian is close to brain, and Sloan is close to schlong, right? So any connections there? Am I stretching?
Maybe. He's made a male masturbation thief known as the Auto Blow.
Oh my, so good. Auto Blow AI Plus.
Auto Blow AI Plus.
Yeah, that's the new thing. That's the name of this current generation that uses the mind, the Auto Blow AI Plus.
Really?
It tracks your brain activity in order to control the action of the AI over Wi-Fi, and judging by the brain waves, can slow up or slow down or speed up its stroking.
What if you've got good Wi-Fi but bad EEG?
Yeah.
What if your electrode says? What if the closest you can get to a straight line is by pulling up an electroencephalogram of your own in brain waves?
So this device, I found it on autoblow.com. Seriously, looks like a milking.
Kinda, yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah, I guess it kind of is.
This
link has to go in the show notes.
Yes, yes.
If there's Auto Blow, is there Deceptiblow?
Apparently,
Well, here's a point too. Years ago, they came out with those Nico Kitty ears things for headphones and headsets and stuff. And those things were actually controlled by something to do with the way you moved your head and stuff like that. But they said it dealt with, you know, mental whatevers. Could that have been a precursor to this?
So this toy runs about $200. It says retail $299.95, but it's on sale right now.
Is the helmet separate?
What's that?
Is the helmet separate?
I don't know. All I see is the Auto Blow device, Auto Blow AI $199. I don't see the helmet separately. See, that's what's kind of weird. I just see the device.
It might be a thing where you have to provide your own EEG helmet or something.
Now that would be really, really weird, wouldn't it? I mean, what are you going to do with this $200 device if you don't already have that piece of it?
True, but on the other hand, it's kind of like if these things get used bunch of different functions.
Okay, wait, but the Auto Blow AI, I think that this is just a programmable thing. I don't think this actually works on.
Yeah.
I think that this, just looking at it, it looks like it may just be
that might be the original one.
It says Auto Blow AI, right?
Oh.
You know, it's saying in the article that the Auto Blow AI has to train for some period of time on the user's brain in order to be able to. It said it took them about 3 months to get the machine to move on the first person trying to use it.
I think that there's
it had to learn their brain waves.
This might be two different things, though. There might be this one that he's doing with the EG.
Right.
It's in here twice. The first one says EGG, and the second time it says EEG.
Yeah, but right after it says EGG, it also says electroencephalogram.
Oh, so, okay,
right.
So they're talking about two different
things. I think they just got it wrong.
Okay, all right.
You know, pro tip, though, for our listeners, if you don't have your own, if you don't have your own Encephalo helmet and you need one to go with this, you can make your own if you know how to solder and have a pasta colander on hand.
So to me, I think what is probably going on here, what I think is that he's taken his Autoblow AI and that's the one device, but then he's taken this EEG headset and plugged it into it and connected them, and that's a different thing. It's taking that device, but it's operating it differently.
That might be it.
Yeah, because I don't think, because there's no way that this is coming, that for $200 especially, coming with that helmet.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that helmet is way more expensive than the device. But
anyway, this guy has apparently created a large array of sex toys, notorious for it, in fact. And Playboy published a profile on him in 2016 titled "The Man Who Wants to Change the Way Men Get Off."
Cool, I guess.
So he kind of sees
does it help him get on too?
He sees himself as a visionary, and I kind of like that.
You know, if he would just get into penis lengthening machines,
there are plenty of those out there.
No, if he would just get into penis lengthening, then he could get the nickname Elongate Musk.
Anyway, it's interesting.
Previous inventions include a flexible vibrator and male masturbator known as 3FAP, which features orifices designed to resemble mouths, vaginas, and anuses.
Nice.
Yeah, giggity.
Yeah, but that sounds uncomfortable trying to use all three of those at once.
Yeah, you don't want to get your chocolate and your peanut butter.
No. That.
It looks really interesting what they're doing here, and I think that like I say, I think you can go buy the device, but it's not exactly what they're talking about here, because they've retrofitted it with this helmet. The article is the New York Post, and so of course they're not going to be. I mean, it's there's a Vice report too. The Vice one might have more. Vice is better at this stuff than it has the. Okay, the Vice has the report. I don't know. We should have read the Vice one. We might have more details. Vice is better at this. The New York Post is a rag, and Vice is at least pro sex generally, right?
Sorry for using the wrong source.
Yeah. Also, it looks like it might have originally come from Motherboard.com. Were they also looking at this? That's another tech such thing. EEG Autoblow.
You can also.
Okay, here Brian Sloan's latest version of the Autoblow. Using EEG to enter the mind of a masturbator. Okay, so this is a newer version than the one I was looking at it. Okay, so this would be something new.
Okay.
So you can go right now for $200. You can get the original Autoblow AI, or you can wait to get this one with this helmet, which there's no way you're going to get it for $200. What's the helmet worth to make all this work? Is this a $1,000 masturbator now?
Everybody heard me say wires and pasta colander.
Yeah, Mac, I don't think that's quite going to work.
Well,
it might work for you. I take it back. Maybe that works for you.
I would imagine the helmet would be at least like a few $100 on its own. Maybe not $1,000, but.
Well, first off, it would have to have the ability to self-regulate.
Yep.
It would have to have that calling the pizza place. Order one with it. It would have to pretty much be able to be hidden underneath a cap or something, because I mean, it really sucks if you're using your brain to do yourself. Are we on the next one?
No, here
it is. No, we're still on that one. Right.
Yeah.
And someone notices the cap. I mean, you don't want to be trying to come up with some kind of lie. Saying it's a beret or something.
Yeah. There's
a whole bunch of different qualities that this thing needs to be extremely usable.
Sure. So here, I think the Vice article, I think, gets a little bit more into that. As for whether I see this as a consumer option, I think the headset is like those from Emotive and are one pathway. I don't know what Emotive is. But only for BIC hobbyists, as it's still technical and technical to implement. Sloan says for more definition pathways, a more definite pathway is an implant like Elon Musk Neuralink. At first, controlling the sex device will only be possible when people get into a BIC implementation for medical reasons. But if they are shown to be safe, and if they are ever approved for non-medical necessary purposes, okay, so non-medical necessary purposes, but will 100% be use of them be to control sex toys? Neuralink, Elon Musk's brain implementation company, recently received FDA approval for human clinical trials. Okay, so something more sophisticated like this Neuralink to control the toy.
I don't understand though why is it a trademark thing? Why are you spelling the name of a disposable lighter?
BCI implementation.
You were saying BIC.
Oh, no, it's BCI. Yeah, it's not. Okay. But it's not. Yeah, not BIC. BIC.
They make pens too.
Yeah, I don't. What is BIC? BCI. Anyway, that's pretty. The Vice article is definitely better. Read the Vice article. Skip the New York Post article. The New York Post article.
One last question about the traditional electroencephalogram headset. If that's what you're forced to use on this. The question I've got is, Brian, you're in Texas. Do you think a 10-gallon hat would cover that up?
Yeah, hey, I think that the problem is going to be the master part, because that's just not going to be discreet.
You know, now I'm thinking about those devices that will allow people to automatically operate your dildo or like vibrating panties or whatever they are.
Exactly. Yeah, remote dildo or remote vibrator. Yeah.
Now you just know that when you see like some guy wearing one of those things and leering at a woman while she's squirming, you know what's going on.
It's like when people used to walk around, you know, talking to themselves, but now they have cell phones.
Brian, you know, as far as the masturbator goes, a 10-gallon hat will cover that up.
Is it going to cover it?
Or to put it as Mel Brooks's writing in the movie Blazing Saddles would have it, hey cowboy, is that a 10-gallon hat, or are you just enjoying the show?
Show.
All right, ready to move on. Mac has an AI thing, so of course we need to do it.
Oh,
I do have an AI thing. The software.
This is from Tom's Hardware.
Oh, it's from Tom's Hardware because I figure Tom's Hardware is going to post. I mean, I've also read the University of Chicago stuff on it, but I figure Thomas Hardware has the clearer information in its post. What this is basically it's a software that you can apply to your art that is supposed to block AI from learning your style from it.
Okay.
So it basically subtly shifts around so that what a human sees and what the AI sees are two different things.
But it's just a filter, right?
It's not. I don't think it's exactly a filter. It more like it actually rewrites the JPEG in some ways.
Okay.
But it rewrites it in ways that we can't detect, but AI would not be able to see through.
And so are they saying that this is going to, like, so this will prevent the AI from picking up on that style completely?
They're saying that it will prevent the AI from learning from that.
Okay, but let me ask you this. Isn't this just starting an arms race between the people making the AI that developed this stuff and the people?
Yes, it absolutely is. And the University of Chicago article acknowledged that.
Okay. So it's a temporary measure until they find a way around this one, and then they have to come up with something new.
And then they have to update the software to do more stuff, yeah.
It seems like the worst possible way to deal with the problem.
Well, and it also doesn't do anything for the pieces of, you know, for the billions of pieces of artworks that are already out there that the AI have learned from. It only will work on new artworks that have not already been disseminated. I think there's a better process out there already, which is what I use on my artwork. I use a process known as obscurity to keep AI from learning from it.
Nobody, AI doesn't know who the hell
you
are.
Well, you don't put it on the internet at all.
Yeah. Well, he has actually, there's quite a bit of stuff on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But it's just obscure. Nobody, it's not popular.
But it's all attached to this podcast, so it's really obscure.
That work.
Yeah, so only one person who's not on the podcast knows about it.
Yeah, probably, right?
Well, maybe three.
It is interesting, you know, people are so panicked about AI imitating a style and all this. Like, so many people seem to believe that AI is just like cutting and pasting different people's things and then just like smoothing out the unnaturalism or whatever. But and they don't understand. No, it's actually like learning the art. Like it's looking at it. It's not. It doesn't have pieces of the art stored away. It's just learning the patterns.
Is it learning? I mean, I think I debate that idea, that concept. I think that the one thing that these AIs are not doing at this point is they're not actually learning. They are pattern matching and then building based on those patterns. But I don't know if it's actually like learning their own style.
I think
They're not learning to do anything new. Basically these are recognition engines. And when I say they're learning, they're basically learning to recognize objects and things in pictures just by looking at them enough and learning to see, okay, this is an apple and that is a table or whatever the things are. And we've had that for a while, and just recently we've been able to kind of tweak it and, you know, trick the system in order to get it to actually generate stuff.
I think that if I were actually going to say that AI was learning from what it was seeing, then it would be making its own paintings. But that's me.
And it would be developing its own style from all of the. It's still just big pattern matching engine.
Yeah, it's pattern matching, but you know it doesn't have like if you ask it to create the Mona Lisa, it doesn't actually have a copy of the Mona Lisa for reference in its archive that it can go to. It's just got. I kind of know what it's supposed to look like. I'll try to draw it from memory kind of deal, because that's what we've taught it, but we haven't like given it complete access to all of this stuff, because of course like the data sets that comprise these libraries are hundreds of terabytes, whereas like an installation of Stable Diffusion is about 8 gigabytes or so.
Which is how we got the Mona Lisa Marie Presley.
So basically it's storing everything in a lot more abstract form, and that's what it's learning is. We have to train it in order for it to learn how to do that, and it's got these kind of abstract ideas of what's going on, but you know it's not actually thinking about anything. And if it was able to think about it, if you're asking to ask it what it was doing, it wouldn't think it was creating anything at all. It would think it was just cleaning up a picture that was already there.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, that's exactly it, right? It's almost like it's removing the cruft and getting to, you know, like what Sculptor would say, that it was already there. I just moved the accent.
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, dumbass, you were saying on a prior episode that what it does is it removes noise through a series of noise filters.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, but you were also saying that people think that AI is cutting and pasting. Well, in general, people think anything to do with computer generated art, whether it's what I do or AI or Photoshop, is Photoshop. In other words, people in general think that if you tell them you're doing artwork on the computer, that you're basically Photoshopping stuff together.
Yeah, although that's interesting now, because now pretty much everybody is posting stuff that's obviously Photoshop, and they're posting it in AI groups or whatever, like as though they think it's AI, and it's like, no, Photoshop exists and you can look, and that's pretty obviously Photoshop and not AI.
Photoshop is a legitimate way to make art. There's taking photos and photoshopping them, right? Which is a term we developed, you know, where somebody takes an existing photo and then edits it. But you can legitimately make, you know, original art in Photoshop. There's clearly a distinction.
Well, Photoshop is definitely an art form.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't buy that, just go look at some of the posts of people who've asked this one particular artist to clean up pictures for them and what he did.
Okay.
Because he has a good sense of humor.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look those up later.
Yeah. But you can do some pretty creative stuff with AI too. Like there is a certain level that you can just like type in a prompt, like, I'd like to see this, and just you get something interesting. But you can also, like, you can make your own drawings and have the AI interpret them in a different way, like as a photo or another different type of art form or whatever. And, you know, that's really cool too. And that's a lot of your own effort that you put into that. And there are, like, ways in order to manipulate the system with prompts and different other things that you can put in, random seeds and stuff to get you know, exactly what you want out of AI that can take a lot of time and effort to put into in order to get something that you're trying to get. And it's not just like putting prompts in and accepting whatever the machine spits out at you.
It is a lot of work to it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm debating that there's an art form there as well.
I'm just hung up on putting random seeds into it.
Well, dumbass seems to be seeding a lot of things lately.
Whoa.
I'm very seedy.
Anyway, but to get back to our article, okay, so that's what, there's one thing to say what it's doing, but it is scraping people's artwork and it is building on that. And whether it should be doing that or not is a question that needs to be talked about and a question that needs to be answered. I don't think that I like this approach because it creates an arms race between the and doesn't solve the problem, right? Where the problem should really be solved, right? The solution to how you train this AI and what you train it on and what's legitimate to train it on needs to be established. If you don't want your artwork in that AI and you don't want to train on that, that should be available. But there is something to be said that anything that is published on the internet, while it's not free to republish it, is free to be absorbed, right?
Yeah.
And so these questions and how we're going to deal with it need to be solved.
How many different ways are there to make your artwork uncopyable that are easily gotten around?
Right.
If you set your artwork not to be downloaded in the web page, screenshot the fucker.
Right. Exactly. If I take this photo and screenshot it, do I immediately get around whatever you've done to block me from doing that, from absorbing it into my AI? Probably, right? It's like the analog loop, right?
About the only thing I've ever come across that I have not found a way around is the big watermark across the middle of the picture.
Right, but you could Photoshop that out if you were really good and blend it away.
I could. And I could do that, but it's too much of a pain in the ass, generally speaking.
Right, but you could write an AI to do it now.
Right.
So we're creating an arms race.
We're creating an arms race.
And you know what? The people that are trying to block you, right?
Yeah.
There's no putting this genie back in the bottle.
Right.
Your generative AI is out there.
Yep.
And even if you have some sort of protection, if somebody wants to get your artwork and put it in AI and make derivatives of it, there are still ways to do it.
Yeah. Now, generative AI can't be used to create pornography, though, right?
Well, that's a yes, it could, but
no, I think that, I think that can only be done with degenerate AI.
Degenerative. Yeah. Well, I mean, because I do want to see the moan, Alisa.
That's the last testament.
All right. Dumbass, why don't you do yours and then we'll end with my.
All right. Yeah. This is fairly. There's a supermarket. Let me just open up the link. But they had a AI that would generate recipes based on ingredients you gave it. Yeah,
this is on.
So,
this is Forbes. This comes from.
Uh-huh. And they left it out available to the public, and the public did, as you imagine, gave it inappropriate ingredients to make a meal out of, and as such, it gave them inappropriate recipes, including one where it asked, What could I make if I only had water, bleach, and ammonia?
No.
And it suggested making deadly chlorine gas, or as the savvy mealbot calls it, aromatic water mix.
So the headline is Supermarket AI Gives Horrifying Recipe for Poison Sandwiches and Deadly Chlorine Gas. Oh my God. I mean, every time we've given people one of these chatbots, you know, people are going to break it.
Now, it's not surprising. This is basically based on ChatGPT, and people have been able to mess with ChatGPT like this whole time. But what struck me about this is that, like, the exact same thing with the exact same horrifying results could have easily been done with just, you know, a basic program where where you're just like, all right, list the ingredients. All right, let's put them together in a random way. And you can just do that with traditional programming. It doesn't even need to be AI.
Right, exactly.
No,
yeah.
No. Any questionnaire you give to people, they're going to mess up.
I think I'm going to need that recipe for the yogurt dumpling guacamole, though.
That sounds, oh, God.
And mosquito repellent mosquitoes.
It's like getting recipes from The Onion.
Anybody up for Oreo vegetable stir fry?
Nice.
Well, I'm quite sure at least one person has created that.
The issue I have with that is chopping the Oreos. I mean, how do you chop the Oreos without breaking them into little bits?
You're going to want to use a cleaver.
And how high do you have to be?
Just crush that baby.
Very high.
That's great. All right. So I was reading a blog the other day, and I came across a claim that women are actually not suited well from, and so I immediately went, interesting, because it does sound like the kind of things that we're hearing from I don't know if it was in Mary Roach's book Bonk, but if you remember Sex at Dawn kind of had this same kind of implications to say.
What the standard line is that women prefer to have a man around in order to have somebody to do like the hunting, like in evolutionary terms, man can go out, do the hunting and take care of the family while the woman watches the kids. And I guess that's the traditional family relationship that everybody's pushing, right?
Well, I think if I may, I have a feeling that has been said by men who probably want that to be the case, right? And maybe no research has ever been done to validate such a point, and that the research coming back now seems to suggest that is not at all the case.
I was reading something interesting this week. It just kind of stuck in my head. It was talking about men have traditional jobs around the house. They fix stuff. If the pipes get busted, man's supposed to be able to do some amateur plumbing on. Men take out men fix the car when it gets broken, et cetera, et cetera. But the point that the person was making is that every job that is a man's special talent is something that comes up every once in a while, and the man expects to get, you know, laurels and accolades for it and be paraded through the Roman Senate. And everything that a woman has special talents for is shit that she has to do every day.
Exactly. So, yeah. So the man is real proud of his 1%.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This article starts out. This one is from Medium.com, which I've read more and more stuff at Medium.com, but I don't really know much about this site. But it says monogamy is not natural for women either. Okay. It's basically what it says.
Real quick, Brian.
Sure.
Have you gotten a ticker tape parade for anything you've done yet?
I certainly have not. Yeah, nope.
My pinata is also in the mail.
Exactly. But it is true that, you know, I can fix a pipe, and that a lot of these things that I can't actually do those things. I did today clean the shower and the toilet. So yeah. I did 2%.
Ooh, good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's but right. Brian, traditionally, she can bring home the bacon and fry it up in the pan and never let you forget that you're a man.
Okay. But when it does come to cooking, I am by far the better cook. we all know women aren't good at casual sex, only have affairs for love, are biologically disinterested in sex, and that more than men need and thrive on monogamous relationships. And I bet, you know, if we could quote that was a quote from a man. you know, and I realize that, evolutionary psychology is, I guess, kind of a tricky field, you know, that the way that they're piecing stuff together. But you do have a lot of men in this field that are saying bullshit things that are just outright bullshit. Jordan Peterson, I think, being one that has said a lot of this garbage, like women don't orgasm, this stuff like that. And, you know, that their need that they don't have this biological need for sex and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And none of that is true. And on this podcast, I think we've covered a lot of stuff that really dispels a lot of those myths already.
I think the media is a lot responsible for giving us the idea that men are more likely to cheat, since that's more of what's depicted out there in the media, the man cheating and the woman going on a rampage, throwing his stuff out on the lawn and stuff.
Yeah, and I think, and because of that, I think that the numbers of women's infidelity is drastically underreported. Because men can say these things, and there's this expectation that, oh yeah, you know, men are going to cheat. Right, where it's not where I think in more and more we're finding that that just not necessarily the case. And so the articles that I've read they give a spectrum of anywhere between 13 to 50% of women have report having sex outside of the marriage.
Men have better luck getting caught cheating.
Or they just have better advocacy for their cheating, maybe.
Well, no, I was saying men are much better at getting caught cheating than women are.
Yeah, but I'm saying that the PR for men cheating in relationships is better than the PR for women cheating in rips.
Yeah.
Right? It's this idea of slut shaming and that we're doing where you know, if a man has an affair, that it's looked at differently than a woman having an affair. And
well,
so
you know, boys will be boys.
And a woman is seen as more of a home wrecker, right?
Right, exactly, right?
Exactly.
And then the reasons that they're having affairs like are often are for emotional connections and stuff like that. Where the actual studies and what people are saying is that they cheat for the same reason that men do. Something new. They're cheating to have better sex, and so it's not any different. The other thing is that, you know, we're hearing these ideas that women are want to have sex less, except for that's not true. At the beginning of a relationship, both the men and the women are coming together and want to engage in sex. It's only over a period of time that seems to kind of wane off.
The point that Odin's making in the background, which you're kind of ignoring, is that in the bird world, men have to show off what they can actually do in order to get a female interested.
Exactly. Every year they have to go through this process.
They have to, every year they have to be the best possible mate out of all the possible mates in order to get the female interested.
That's right. How many of you men have thought of building a house to show off your prowess to the women every year?
Or, you know, bringing shreds of multicolored paperback stuffed in the back of your pants. Because lovebirds do that every day.
Birds are not cheap. You can tell that.
That's right.
Right, and so it's seemingly that the reasons that women cheat are not that much different from the reasons that men cheat. You know, novelty and you know and stuff like that. I read on a woman described described it like this. It says, "Boy meets girl, boy loves girl, girl loves boy, boy and girl get married, boy keeps sexual interest in girl." Over time, girl loses interest in boy, and that women are actually losing interest in their male partners faster than men are losing interest in their female partner, and that there's a reversal here, and which brought me. So I started also looking at this idea of this 7-year itch.
Let me ask you: is men's non-waning sexual interest in their partner because their interest in their partner is not always exclusive?
I don't know. It's not getting to that at all. It's at this point suggesting that in a monogamous relationship that a woman will lose interest in the man first.
Yeah, I understand what it's saying. I'm just asking if maybe the reason that is happening is because men are not losing interest in their partner as much as they're sharing interest in their partner with interest in other available females. Because, you know, we know girls look too, but.
So I guess the question that we would want to answer to get to the bottom of your question is that at what point after marriage do men and women cheat? When does the cheating start, right?
And in a lot of cases, it starts 2 days before the marriage.
Well, I mean, certainly that can happen, but I don't know that that's the norm. So that's why I started kind of looking at this idea of the 7-year itch, And what it's suggesting is actually that the interest in these partnerships actually starts to wane at 4 years and not 7 years, and that this idea, this 7-year itch, might actually be better called a 4-year itch.
Yeah, but that doesn't sound as good on the movie.
It does. You know, that's true.
And it is kind of just the case that two people may have like different sexual needs, and like people's sexual needs can change over different periods of time and over different periods of time in their life. So like you and your partner may not be in the same place as to what you need sexually at some point.
No, I think that's fair. And I think that the research might bear some of that out. I think that what it's coming down to is that we're seeing that the monogamy is, according to evolutionary psychology, not natural, right? That it's something that's very new to us. Also, one of the things that another article I was reading was talking about that after a certain period, the urge to have an offspring from another person, right, to seek that out might also be there. And that's something that is, you know, historically a thing. And that because of birth control, you know, our bodies really haven't adapted to this idea that we can, that, you know, that we have the control over that, I guess, what do you want to say, biological clock or those needs. And so, you know, we're still kind of adjusting to some of our more modern, you know, I mean, if a species has been doing something for 100,000 years, and then over the last, you know, 1,000, you've come up with this new way to control it. It stands to reason that there could potentially be some adjustment over time, that the brain has to, you know, kind of learn these new norms.
Mm-hmm.
I just found it interesting, and it's interesting just the way that we look at it, and in society is looked at, and the things that we say, that I think that they say these things about women versus men, and they're probably not true, but it's like how they want it to be, right? We're saying we're putting things into myths that at least men want them to be this way, but they aren't necessarily the case. This idea that women like sex is the kind of stuff that like Jordan Peterson and that group that they still don't accept. We heard it before, you know, when we hear congressmen talking about women and sex and rape, how dismissive they are towards the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so these ideas of the man's position, the woman's position that they have created, right, that they would like to be the case, go against our actual biology.
Mm.
So and more research, and we're seeing more and more of this stuff come out. But even I would say that like even the sites that I'm referencing are not like the most cutting edge, you know, they're not maybe the best sources at this time, right? The people that are talking about this stuff, and maybe it's wrong, but like this first article that I was referring to is from Medium, and then it was written by Vicky, the woman, and then it was published at her site, Vice.com. Vice puts a lot of this stuff out, you know, and Harvard EDU. So that one is maybe a little bit better as far as publications. TheCut.com, not a clue. The last one is from Psychology Today, and they're usually pretty good, right? But they're a mix of stuff. They have a lot of different writers, and some of it's garbage, right? So, you know, so I just think that there's something interesting here, and I think that maybe we're not always being honest with ourselves about what we want to be the truth and what is the truth, and that. And those lies are never going to be true, as true as we'd like them to be.
There's okay, my lost it.
You lost it already?
I've already been lost a while ago, but my brain is coming up with the concept of how women, you look at the reference of, you know, a woman scorned, beware a woman scorned or whatever it is.
Sure.
No hath no fury like a woman scorned.
That.
And
yeah,
yeah, that, like I was saying, throwing his stuff all over the lawn, breaking his stuff.
Well, the other thing is, too, is that there's a simple factor of if a woman is scorned or not paid attention enough, a lot of times they will just go out and get their own elsewhere.
But I think that's true of anybody. If women are or if men and women are growing apart at a much earlier rate than we expected, because it did talk about how divorce rates are highest after the first 4 years and then trickle off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously, there needs to be some honesty about these relationships and longevity, right? I have a friend, and when I talk about marriage and stuff like that, I always talk about how, and divorce should always be an option. And he hates that. He's like, you shouldn't go into a marriage thinking that you can, that divorce is an option. I'm thinking, well, why not? I mean, why not know that safety net is there? Why do these things have to be so fucking permanent that we can't consider? It's like, okay, I can get married, but I have a way out. Why do we have to look at marriage as this thing that has to last forever, right? Well, why does that have to be the case?
Yeah.
Because that's what the Bible says, man.
A relationship doesn't have to be forever.
Right, it doesn't.
Even one that produces children, and even if you raise the children, it doesn't mean that you have to stay together forever.
Yeah, but you're neglecting the ultimate arbiter as to what is good and right and social.
Exactly, and I think that's where that's
and
exactly
you know that the Bible clearly states that it's actually okay to send your best friend off to die if you want his wife.
But the thing is, Mac, I saw you picking up those sticks on a Sunday, so I'm afraid you're going to have to be stoned to.
I think I'll bet you're wearing mixed fabrics right now. Off with your head.
Probably.
Waiting for the end of time.
But yeah, so a lot of these are biblical principles as the
realistic.
Yeah. Oh, and just not just.
It's there's an awful lot to it as well, in the factor that, like you said, times change. And at one point of time, you learn what you're going to learn to do for a certain amount of your life, and then you're gone. But nowadays, we learn a lot during our lives. There's a lot more time that we have to work with what we learn. It's not just one job, one thing, but both male and female. Do an awful lot in our lives, and it's so much different.
You know, some friends of mine are getting divorced right now. I could just say one of the people is my friend. She gets to keep me in the divorce. And she was blindsided by this. I mean, I think she kind of knew it, but you know, she did kind of get blindsided by it. And they've been together 30 some years, and over the last 14, they really have. I mean, they've been living separate lives. And he decided that he did not want to try to recover it, and that he was moving on. And you know, and I always think back to the Louis C.K. talking about divorce. Mm-hmm. And he's like, the guys get divorced, and everybody's coming up to him and going, "Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that." And he's going, "Why are you doing this doing that to him on the best day of his life?" Mm-hmm. He says, "Because happy people don't get divorced, right?" And
very true.
And I mean, and I, but I don't know that, I don't know if that's, but is it?
Well, no,
I do want to expand on it a little bit.
I think that even if the guy wasn't the one who wanted to get divorced, even if the girl wasn't the one who wanted to get divorced, I think that their married life has probably been miserable for a while to the point where the divorce is going to be a relief, because happy people, I'm not necessarily going to say happy people don't get divorced, but happy people don't head toward divorce.
Mm. Well, you know, I guess it makes for a good joke if you don't think about it too much. But
yeah.
I mean, like, each divorce is different, and there are a lot of reasons that people might get a divorce, including a lot of feelings and how amicable they might be about getting a divorce with each other. I mean, it's not always a case of how much of it your happiness decides. Sometimes it can be very amicable and like, oh, we've just like grown apart and we don't see a future in this anymore, but we're still friends kind of deal. Or it could be very acrimonious. And the idea that like happy people don't get divorced, I mean, it's a lot more complicated than that. That's a very simplistic way.
Yeah, exactly. It is. But here's the thing is that to what you're talking about, Mac is the best person here to speak to this, because if I can pick on you for a second, Mac. You got divorced, but you still live with that person, and you two are still companions. companions, even though you're not having sex. You don't have that kind of relationship anymore.
That is true.
But you still are companions.
And you know what? We get along a fuckable lot better than we did when we were married.
Yep. There you go. Right. but you've maintained that relationship with that person. Right.
Yeah.
So while a relationship.
In addition, I've got a two divorce expertise.
Yeah. Yeah. You've done it twice.
I have.
Yeah.
The first time was that one began in matrimony and ended in acrimony. So.
Right. But also it's also okay for a relationship to develop into something else. Right. You become the support for each other, but that sexual piece is gone. But there's something to be said for allowing.
Yeah,
people,
I mean, it is possible to have a very deep and emotional relationship with somebody without having that sexual element, or you might have had that sexual element and not so much anymore, and that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just interesting. I guess what for me the interesting point here is. It is the social norms, the myths that we create around this stuff that make it difficult for people when it doesn't work out the way that the Bible says it's supposed to.
Mm. Yeah, I like to talk about sometimes our toxic monogamy culture, in which we place so much importance on the one person to fulfill all our needs. That's very unfair on both people.
Can be. Yeah. That said, I'm keeping mine.
All right. So, just to make sure, this whole topic was not your attempt to justify your wife cheating on you.
No, it was not.
Or to justify the man, or to justify either, both, or neither.
I appreciate your concern. Nope, it comes from something else. But it was something I ran across, and you know, you go down one of those rabbit holes and you might as well just share it on this podcast, right? Because what else are we going to do other
exactly.
than kind of distribute this kind of garbage?
It's fun, and it lets it get out.
Yeah. And Brian, there's no reason for you to be jealous of that good looking guy at work that she sees all the time.
Yeah, because he's 2 years old.
So what you're saying is, he's just approaching his sexual prime.
Oh, God. Okay. There's another thing that I think is bullshit. This idea that
more
women
bullshit.
And men hit their sexual prime at different times is garbage. It's cover for men and women who want to cheat.
Mm. I think the original staffer that came from Alfred Kinsey, right?
Is it? Is that a Kinsey thing? I don't know.
I think, if I remember correctly, it was a thing where like they it was a survey of how many times they orgasm, and they found that men tended to report more orgasms in their late teens, whereas women in their 30s.
Okay.
Which there have been like various explanations for that. Part of it might be women, you know, gaining more comfort and familiarity with their bodies more around that age.
I guess. Go finish your thought. Sorry.
But yeah, a lot of it could be very societally, and I don't think the same holds up in different societies around the world, but I don't know the stats on that.
That's an interesting, and also I would wonder, you know, are we conflating sex and orgasm, right? Because does sex have to include orgasm? Are there other types of intimacy that we might call sex that it isn't necessarily about just orgasming, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it's a very crude methodology in order to try to get a handle on it, and it's just one way of looking at it. So, when you make that the basis for like this whole fact thing that people believe, it does render it kind of absurd a little.
Yep, I think so. But that's an episode. That's a topic for another podcast, and I think make a great topic.
Woo! All right, next topic.
I think we're done, because Madcat, you didn't put squat into this document, so we have nothing to end with.
Nothing to end with,
but then
we did have a fun time.
Exactly. So let's say goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, everybody.
That's right. That's another one in the can. You get it?
Easter.
If you've made it this far, that's an hour of your time you're never getting back. But the amateur skeptics appreciate you giving that hour to us. If you'd like to tell us how you felt about spending that hour with us, let us know at WTF@amateurskeptics.com. The Amateur Skeptics Podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike No Derivatives 3.5 license. Intro music by Peter Cannell.
Find more of Peter's music at soundcloud.com/PKANOL. Exit Music by OFM. Find more of their music at myspace.com/OFMHQ. Artwork for The Amateur Skeptics by Sean Smith Ford. Copyright Shadow Knight Digital Portraiture.